Good evening, wool gatherers, and welcome to episode 171 of Wanderings and Wool Gathering. On tonight's episode, we're going to be looking at the new album from Ministry, and it might be a bit political. I know that will be a surprise to many, but he might have a few complaints to get off his chest, and he does. And we're also going to be choosing our top five albums from the 1980s, and you can imagine how difficult that is because the 1980s, like any other decade, was loaded with amazing albums. And so we've each chosen our top five. We've got a couple of honorable mentions to share with you as well. If you have any during the show, please feel free to share those in the comments, and we will show them on the screen. If you like what you hear and see tonight, please subscribe, leave a comment, feel free to share that with your friends, and smash that little like button if you would, please. And joining me tonight, as always, is Mr. Metalhead Mundy.
Step inside into his mind, it's boy band time, it's
Metalhead Mundy.
As if on cue, there he is.
Heyo, heyo. One of these days, I'm going to get Paul to do an extended mix of that song so I can just rock out to it all the time.
That would be fantastic. I still need a theme song, but whatever. All right. Are you ready to do some work tonight, sir?
I am. I think it should be fun, though. I don't know if it's fun. It's not really work, is it?
No. Well, it feels like work when you're trying to wheedle down decades yeah. worth of albums yeah. that you like into five that you can go, yeah, those are my top five. I guarantee if you ask me a month from now, only a couple of these would be the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I had, you know, there's a couple different ways I could have approached this. So hopefully what I settled on is fun.
All right. Well, it looks like Mr. Mundy is going to have to pay JPP to complete that song.
I don't know if I can afford by the hour. I don't know. We'll talk.
I'll call Kyle and see if we can get Joe Rife 2.0 for Metalhead Mundy.
Oh, boy.
That is one of my favorites. I love that song. Hopefully we'll have him on the show. I don't even know if I have it. Do I have it here somewhere? I don't think I've got it loaded. Maybe just for people, because we talk about it all the time, maybe they don't know what we're talking about. And I will have that audio to share. I don't think it's copyrighted, so we should be able to share it on the show with no problems, I hope. So, but it is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So we'll, as normal, we'll do our challenge first, and then we'll hit the album. I do not have a Stump Metalhead Mundy because, frankly, we can't stump the boy. So what's the point? Yes, that is nasty. Referring to this.
Swinging deep into the valleys of Liptonia.
That's nasty.
Able to plunge from high altitudes, only to land with a gentle splat.
That's nasty.
Receiving only the finest education from his instructor, Earl Grey. It's T-Bags. Too hot for TV.
Actually, it's not T-Bags. He is not on the show this evening.
Yeah, but he's not here.
He is
so sad.
It is indeed. But a lovely song nonetheless. Thank you, JPP. Speaking of music, let's go ahead and bust it out. Let's get right down to it. Top five albums from the 1980s. Anybody have a guess right now? What? Just throw it up there right now. If any of you can guess one of my top five or Mundy's top five, you can win this wandering shirt right here. So I know we have people on watching right now. I can see it up there. So if you think you know, put it in the comments right now before we get rolling. I will share. We had Brian Hall, gentleman I graduated with a long time ago. He did share his top five, and these were his. He said the Bullet Boys. Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime, Power Station, Best of the Gap Band, and the Dead Kennedys, Plastic Surgery Disasters. And kind of in a note there, Mundy, we got a little Dead Kennedys connection tonight on Ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fun list. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. I love that. Operation Mindcrime, for my money, one of the best, like, I don't know what you want to call it, a rock opera, like a themed album, you know, but it's one of the best. I absolutely love it. Bullet Boys, I think, you know, they were fun back in the day. I don't know if it holds up real well. I will say Smooth Up Inya. I mean, brilliant. Just brilliant title. Mm-hmm. Power Station, I know I'm not terribly familiar with. Gap Band, not one of my go-tos.
Yeah,
Dead Kennedys, Plastic Surgery Disasters. That's an interesting one to end this list on. This, I love it. It's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And Jello Biafra was insane and still is in a very creative, interesting way. I mean, not like literally insane. And he shows up here, which makes total sense because of the nature of this record.
Yep.
Having Jello on it really adds weight, I think, to what they're singing about. So good choice from Uncle Al. All right. Well, that brings us to our choices, and nobody has picked our top five. So you're just not going to get to win this shirt. All you had to do, we have 10 choices. You just had to pick one.
Yeah, 10 chances.
One. And I can tell you right now, Thriller was not on there, which it's a fantastic record, but neither one of us chose it.
Yeah.
So it's the way it goes. But we will start off with number five. All right. You want to go first, Monday?
I mean, right away, that's two iconic album covers, I think.
Indeed.
But mine, Beastie Boys, License to Ill. I remember, I think I was in fifth grade when this album came out. Totally blew my mind. You know, hip hop, I think around then, it had already built up some traction, but it was getting super popular around the mid 80s. Excuse me. So, and the Beastie Boys, is the way I approach my list is kind of ones that kind of hit me hard when they first came out, and I've stuck with them over the years, and they, you know, really mean something to me. And it's just honestly like I go back to these records quite a bit. So I actually was just listening to License to Ill not too long ago before this challenge was issued. So love it.
Yeah, no, that's a great choice. And I, one of my honorable mentions is Paul's Boutique. That's my 80s Beasties record.
Of course.
And that was really close to this list. And I don't know why I didn't put it in there. But for me, in the 1980s, I loved U2. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were, you know, special. They had that Red Rocks performance, you know, Sunday Bloody Sunday. That was an MTV staple back then. And it was just amazing. They were fantastic. They were different. Then when they hit Octung Baby and then whatever came after that, I was out. I completely dropped the band. I don't listen to them anymore. But this record for me and Unforgettable Fire, boy, those records stand the test of time. I still go back to them. I still like those records. And this one was a really special one. We got to see them in 1987 on this album tour.
Sweet.
And at that concert, they came out dressed up as a country band and opened for themselves as a country band. It was kind of a funny thing. And it was, nobody knew at first, like, who was this band? And then it became quite clear who it was. But that was kind of a cool moment. So that was my number five. U2, The Joshua Tree. And you're right, Mundy. Those are both really iconic album covers.
Yeah. So Paul's comment, I have to address that here. He says that he's guessing Anthrax Among the Living is on my list. So we'll have to wait and see if that pans out for him. But he can't have that shirt, though, because he doesn't wear gray.
No. And also, it's tiny. So if he wins and he wants this particular shirt, he's getting it for his daughter. Otherwise, not saying anything, JPP. It's just that it's tiny. So but she could have it if you wish that. So this one's here ready to go. We'll see if it pans out. It just might. Who knows? All right. Let's go to number four on our list.
Nice.
All righty, my friend. Go ahead.
So I picked Pretty Hate Machine from Nine Inch Nails, Trent's first album. And honestly, like I think we talked about this before, this was not one that I was listening to when it first came out. It just wasn't on my radar until they weren't really on my radar until I think I saw the video for Wish. And I was like, what is this? Holy crap. And then I went back and listened to this. And even at that time, this Pretty Hate Machine is very different from the Broken EP. So, but that's like this is around the time, very early 90s, when I started getting into industrial and electronic music. And this is it, man. This is where it all starts for Nine Inch Nails. And I love it front to back. Love every song. Great stuff.
Fantastic. And Paul, apparently, if he wins, wants the tiny shirt to expose his belly button this summer. So good for you. All right. So my choice for number four was The Cult, Love. And I know they really came on the scene for a lot of people with Sonic Temple in, I think, 89, which is another 80s record. But for me, those first three with Dream and or Dreamtime, Love, and Electric, those are the Cult records, in my opinion. And Love is fantastic. It's got their all-time best song, She Sells Sanctuary, which I absolutely love. But then it's got some other amazing songs on there: Revolution, Big Neon Glitter, Nirvana, Brother Wolf, Sister Moon. It is top to bottom. One of those records you can listen to every song. And it's another one that is an 80s, and it's like 84, I think. So it fits in that 80s time period, but it doesn't feel like what we think of as the 80s. So it's kind of transcendent in that way for me. So my number four is The Cult, Love. And I could have put Electric in there as well, but I didn't. So, and Paul did not guess it, so he doesn't get two shirts. Sorry, buddy. I'm hoping we haven't figured this out yet. If anybody can post from YouTube, and we've had some issues with people not being able to do that. And we have quite a few people watching right now. I don't know if anybody is watching on YouTube, and if they are, I'm worried that they're not being able to, you know, say anything about this show. So if somebody is on YouTube watching right now, give it a go and let me know if it's working. It looks like JPP is maybe doing it from, look at that. Yeah, look at that.
YouTube, yeah.
So it is working.
Yep.
Nice to know. Sorry for the interruption, but that's been an issue, and I wanted to make sure that that kink was worked out. And without further ado, let's go to number three on our list.
Hey, Paul wins a shirt.
Woo, there it is, everybody. You all could have done it if you'd have been a little faster, but JPP in the belly shirt. Happening now. Actually, if anybody does want one, feel free to let me know and we can get you one. That is not a problem. It just won't be free for picking Anthrax. So why Anthrax? I know it's your favorite band. Why this record?
It is. Well, so Among the Living is probably, I mean, for me, it's hard to pick one of their albums that could ever be my favorite. I think this one is probably their, I think some people see this as like the pinnacle of their thrash, you know, era, this early thrash music. It's definitely, I think a lot of critics kind of think of this as their best album. And it is just, it has so many amazing songs on it. I mean, like the title track, Among the Living, I Am the Law, Caught in a Mosh. It's just, I mean, so many classics that have endured for until now. So, man, just great. And that album cover is so good. It's based off of, a lot of people think it looks like the old guy from like Poltergeist 2, which it kind of does, but it's actually based on the song Among the Living, and this artwork and everything is based on The Stand from Stephen King. So Anthrax, actually, they've written several songs based on Stephen King books. So.
Very good.
Yeah.
I love it. Cool. I love it. And I love that Paul knew that. So he has decided that it will be for his kiddo. So we will definitely get that shirt out to you, Mr. JPP. And I've asked him on YouTube to send in his top five. So hopefully he'll come up with five quick ones. Until then, though, I've got to share my number three. And to be honest, my 3, 2, and 1 could have been in any order. They are all just top all-time records for me. I have them all on vinyl and love it. And so this one is Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
Yep.
And for me, I have talked about it a million times on here. There's nothing better than Public Enemy, late 80s, early 90s rap music. They were, according to Chuck, the Black CNN. Mm-hmm. They were important. They were influential. They were dangerous to people because of their ideas. Dangerous to authority, I should say, because they called people out. This record is absolutely amazing musically. All of the details, the lyrics and everything, it's just spot on. You can't find a better rap record than this one. So my number three was Public Enemy, and there will be a Public Enemy tattoo in my near future. So
nice.
It'll be part of a number of different musical things. So it's a whole thing I've planned. I'll share it with you later.
I'd like to do more of that. I've got an Anthrax tattoo, and I have one. I have a tattoo that's kind of based on like some Rise Against imagery and lyrics and stuff, but I would like to do more musical stuff. I have some ideas.
Yes. So JPP is throwing out a record, Run DMC's Tougher Than Leather. It is an amazing record as well.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if this is his number five or his number one or what it is, but it's a great record nonetheless. So good choice, sir. Number two on our list.
Yeah. A couple of very different records
there. Yeah, they could not be any different.
So, yeah, I went with Master of Puppets. I mean, it is it's far and away considered to be Metallica's masterpiece from 1986. So, and again, with Metallica, I would say of their albums in the 80s, it's really kind of a toss up for me between Master of Puppets and Justice for All.
Yes.
And I think they're very different albums. I think the loss of Cliff Burton after Master of Puppets kind of, you know, sent them in a little different direction. And Master of Puppets, I mean, there's so many classics on it. The title track, my absolute favorite Metallica song, one of my absolute favorite songs, period, full stop, is Orion. Mm-hmm. So it's just had to go with Master Puppets.
Nice choice. Yeah, you've talked about Orion on here before, so I knew you loved that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my number two, no surprise here either. It's The Cure, Disintegration. I've talked about this record on the show a bunch of times as well.
Yep.
And I mean, what else is there to say about this record? It's amazing. It's got just the mood and the feel. And I do love the fact that when it was first out, it was not well received. People did not feel like it was the Cure they wanted. And then as it went on, it was like, oh, this is now the most beloved Cure record. And it's got some of their greatest songs on it.
Yep.
So The Cure, Disintegration for me. Love it. Right here, we've got from JPP, we got the Run DMC record. We have Spreading the Disease from Anthrax. We have Metallica's and Justice for All.
Yep.
Megadeth, Peace Sells. Yep. And that's a one we might be seeing again, perhaps. And then Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique. So great, great choices across the board. And that was his, as he says, that's from the hip list. Good hip. Good hip. All right. And without further ado, actually, I would like to know your honorable mentions before your number one. What do you have for your honorable mentions?
Okay. So I just wrote down two. I mean, I could go on forever with stuff from the 80s, but I just wrote down two for time's sake. Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction, 1987.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We've talked about it a million times. It's absolute classic, top to bottom, not a bad song. In my opinion, one of the greatest debut albums ever.
Mm-hmm.
So good stuff. And my other honorable mention is what I feel is a little bit of an underrated album. I will go with Ozzy Osbourne's Ultimate Sin from 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Bark at the Moon and Ultimate Sin were, you know, after Randy Rhoads passed away, he brought in a guitarist named Jake Ely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he gets overlooked quite a bit. Those two albums are absolutely fantastic. There are so many good riffs on there. And, you know, that's all Jake. And Ultimate Sin also has my favorite Ozzy song, which is Shot in the Dark. It's the mm-hmm. last song on the album. And sure. I honestly, to this day, I can't explain why that's like my favorite Ozzy song, because it's not particularly heavy. I don't know. It's just the melody of that song. Something just hits me in the right way. I love it. And Ultimate Sin, great album, underrated.
Yeah, and Jake gets kind of sandwiched between Randy and Zach, which doesn't help the comparisons any, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody would want to be compared in that, in that right. group for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. My honorable mentions were, I already said, Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique, Jane's Addiction, Nothing Shocking, Prince, Purple Rain, Husker Du. They had Candy Apple Gray, which is a great one. I went into college. That's where I found them. Duran Duran's Rio.
Nice.
And I really... This honorable mention could have been my number one. It was sort of tied, but I just threw it out because I didn't want to do two again, like I always do. But Rush Signals, which was part of that big three with Permanent Waves and Moving Pictures and Signals, just killer three albums in a row. But
yeah,
so that's my honorable mention list. And now, drum roll, please. I'm not getting up to go over there. Here we go. Number one. Mr. Mundy.
I mean, there's not enough good things I can say about this. It's Megadeth, Peace Sells But Who's Buying, 1986, which you notice, 1986 has come up a lot for me in this. I don't know what it was about that time, but so many good records came out in 1986. It's insane. I think there have actually been articles written about how was 1986 the best year for music ever. But yeah, this is another one. Peace Sells But Who's Buying. It is. I mean, this is just mean, gnarly Dave Mustaine, just pissed off and just, you know, thrashing it up with the fast riffs. And the band is fantastic on this one. You know, Megadeth is pretty famous for having a lot of lineup changes. It is, so this was the two Daves. It's, you know, Dave Mustaine, Dave Ellefson, and you got Gar Samuelson on drums, who I believe was not really a metal drummer. I think he came in as kind of a jazz drummer that kind of adapted to this thrash style. So he's always been kind of unique. And this one has Chris Poland on the other guitar. And I mean, they were just firing on all cylinders. Absolutely, absolutely masterful work here.
Yeah, it must be something to jazz drummers going into heavy stuff. You know, Jimmy Chamberlain has that jazz influence too, and there's something special about those guys, I think. Okay, that was great. Great choice. And then that came up with Mr. JPP as well. And then we do have a quick honorable mention, which is not BAM. It is Nine Inch Nails, Pretty Hate Machine. Great record. Pet Shop Boys. Oh, that's what I didn't think about. Mm-hmm. Def Leppard, Hysteria. Yeah, another great one from back in the day. And no, he did comment, I'm not putting it up there, but he said Super Bowl Shuffle. And no, because it was a charity, and suddenly, somehow, all the money came up missing. So I don't know. There was a bunch of shady stuff involved with that one. It was cool at the time, but it really
sucked. We can cover that if we do 80s songs, not albums.
That's true. Chris is great.
Chris Poland, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so my number one, it's no surprise to anybody out there, but I thought I pulled back a little bit. I only put one Rush on there. I didn't cheat. And I think a lot of people would agree that this is maybe their best record. And I think people agree genuinely that it's one of the better albums of all time. And I'm not saying you have to say it's the best or anything like that, but I think people do realize, you know, the lineup, the songs, Tom Sawyer, Red Barchetta, YYZ, Limelight, that's your first four songs on the record. That is one heck of a vinyl side, you know. And then the people who really dig into Rush really know you know, you got Camera Eye, which people love, Witch Hunt, Vital Signs. Those are fantastic songs. But top to bottom, every song is listenable to. You should listen. And it's one of my tops of all time. And it happens to be in the 80s. So it is clearly my tops in the 80s as well. So, all right, what's this here? What's Paul saying now? I knew that we are.
So, yeah, there's a great documentary on Netflix right now about the night that We Are the World was recorded. Mm-hmm. You should absolutely find that and go watch it. I can't remember what it's called. Something about Biggest Night in Pop Music or something like that. But, yeah, find that, watch it. It's fantastic doc. Crazy story.
Very cool. So check it out, everybody. All right. Well, that was a fun challenge for this week. Mr. Mundy, do you have our challenge for next week?
I did. I had one. I can't. Oh, yes. I got one.
All right. The challenge for next week. If you're watching right now, pay attention. Join us next week, please.
What I want, I was going to do albums again, but I changed that. I think I want songs. So I want 5 songs that you heard in your lifetime that just absolutely blew your mind and kind of changed the way that you listen to music.
Ooh.
That just, whatever that means to you, if it's a genre you didn't think you liked, and then here comes this band, and they're like, guess what? We're awesome, and now you know it. Mm-hmm. You know, just stuff like that, something like that. Or a genre that you love, that another band, that some band came in and just changed everything about that and tore it down to the roots and built it back up, you know, something like that, that just kind of changed your ear. Change the way you listen to music.
All right. So 5 songs that change the way we listen to music next week. So please play along. Everybody watching, join us. Send your picks in. We would love to hear from you, and we'd love to share it on the show. I was talking to my daughter earlier, and she came up with, or my wife did, one of the two. We were in the living room, but we missed the opportunity that it's the Oscars tonight. We should have done our top scores. Or, I don't know if we want to do.
I feel like we've touched on that before.
We have, but it just seemed really appropriate of all days today to do something like that. Would have been cool.
Yeah. But oh, hey, well. We suck at planning stuff like that. So.
We did. But for all of you out there, we have day jobs. So there's that too. But okay, fantastic. Now we have some work to do because we have a new record out. Uncle Al's back. With yes, Hopium sir. For the Masses.
Love it.
And the first video, was it White Trash? Was that the first one that came? Okay, and that's been out for a while.
Yes.
So I think this album has been in the works for quite a while. And those of you who aren't truly familiar with Ministry, they've been around since the 80s, which is appropriate. We did that tonight.
Yep.
And they're still rocking, they're still heavy, and they still have a message. And if you didn't get the message on this one, listening to it, I don't know. I can't help you. I mean, because it was, you were hit over the head with a hammer, I think.
Yeah, you definitely, you never have to question where Al Jorgensen stands on things. So,
nope.
I think in the early days, that was not the case. You know, they hit the scene with the album With Sympathy, I want to say 1983. But I mean, it is like straight up synth pop. It is the poppiest of synth music. But it's fantastic. It's so good. And then almost immediately they started changing styles and getting into more of like a harder industrial sound. And it's evolved over the years into what now I think a lot of people would call industrial metal or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, somewhere along the line, somebody pissed Al off and he just never let go. So he's all about the politics and yeah, letting you know how he feels about it.
Yeah, you were correct. With Sympathy was 83. My first time that I had listened to or was even familiar at all with them was Twitch.
Yes.
Which came out, and I didn't hear it. And it came out in 86. I didn't hear it in 86. I think it was in 89 when I went away to school. That's the first time I had heard that. Yeah. And then that's when, you know, Mine is a Terrible Thing to Taste and Land of Rape and Honey. Those were big records on the campus scene, and they were fresh and new, and that industrial sound was killing it. It was wonderful. So in your mind, Mr. Mundy, looking at all of the songs here as a whole, do you feel like he's evolved musically, or do you feel like he's just staying in the pocket and using it as a means to share his political views?
Well, I don't know. I think he's kind of, I would say he's definitely evolved. I mean, from With Sympathy even to Twitch is a big difference. And then Twitch into Land of Rape and Honey, Mine is a Terrible Thing to Taste. Those two, I think, are kind of on the same wavelength. Mm-hmm. And they just get progressively heavier. And then Psalm 69 hit, and it was so heavy. Mm-hmm. And it was huge. It was all over MTV. And and even after that, though, like, they have this giant album. And then the next album after that is, I can see the album cover, Filth Pig is what it's called. And it is so different from Psalm 69 that I believe they got dropped from their label because the label wanted more of what worked. And Al was like, no, we're going to do this. So they're like, okay, cool. See ya.
I hate it when you hear those stories all the time. The label wants this. Give us more of this. And I love it when the bands buck that and do, then, you know, you've got somebody who's genuinely out for their, for their art more than the paycheck.
Yeah. So even, so then after Filth Pig, I think they kind of went a little heavier and just have kind of sat in that pocket for a while. And, I think this one actually has done a little bit better job than recent albums of, there's a little bit of different stuff going on here.
Yeah, I feel
and it's great.
I agree with you. And I think the first two songs are really hard driving and they kind of feel like older Ministry. Mm-hmm. But then he takes some chances later on. There's even a little acoustic opening, I thought, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But as far as we'll hit it right now, our opening track, was it a good album opener? And I have to say 100%. Yes. That it was a killer album opener.
I agree with that 100%. It's listed. The track name is, hey, Kevin, what's up? We're just starting to talk about Ministry.
Kevin Rader Rodenbaugh from, what's that group called again? Jack the Radio. You guys have to check that out. Welcome, Kevin.
But so it's listed as BDE, which of course stands for Big Dick Energy. But it is a good opener. It's kind of like got a groovy little stomper feel. Of course, it's with that title, it's all about like toxic masculinity and that kind of thing. And it's a pretty great song. It's a very solid album opener. I'm happy with it. I believe there's a video for this song as well.
There is. Yeah. And I think it sets the tone for the record in every way possible. It does it musically, thematically. It just absolutely kills it. It talks about, toxic masculinity the whole time.
Yeah.
But I love that line, hating what you cannot have and killing what you cannot be. I thought that was a fantastic line, and it really did set the tone for his attack on politics and how he feels about people in power in general.
Yep.
So, wonderful opener. And that goes right into the second track, which was their first video, which was hilarious. And I think we reviewed the video at one point.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's goddamn white trash.
It was a while ago. It's been out for a while, the video.
So. Kevin said Metallica. I'm not sure what he's referring to. Ministry, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, so
I'm guessing that's an 80s, something to do with the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. But and that's another, this one, of course, is ripping on a lot of things as well. And the fact that we're duped into the civil war in this country, not literally a civil war, but the fact that we're so split down the middle and we're so far left, we're so far right. And I love his line, indoctrinated, the facts are ignored, manipulated into civil war. Yep. We are in effect sheep, either in either direction.
Yeah, musically, I think this is like quintessential later stage ministry. It's big riffs. They've got the dialogue samples, repetitive chorus. I mean, this is what kind of what ministry has been all about for several years now.
Yeah, and if anybody hasn't listened or they're going to listen to this one, there is a lot of repetition throughout all the songs, and that is a staple of ministry.
And I think that's kind of that goes along with the industrial, you know, edge of the band. So that industrial music incorporates a lot of electronics, which tends to be samples, drum loops, that kind of thing. So
yep,
you're going to get repetition.
The third song is called Just Stop Oil. I wonder what that one's about.
I wonder.
And yeah, again, it is like hard hitting. And this one, it's not just about oil. It's about how we're just basically destroying our planet in general. It talks about glaciers and forests and oceans and air. And he's really going after it. He does not like big business. He does not like politicians.
Yeah.
And he basically blames them for the ills in the world right now. And it's on full display here, that's for sure. As far as the music goes, this one didn't stand out as much as the other two, but it was, you know, straightforward industrial.
I think this one, the music in this one is actually pretty cool. If you really listen, there's a lot going on because there's right from the beginning, there's a bit of a almost a reggae or ska undertone that kind of gets buried under a lot of different layers, but it's there. And then it kind of, you know, almost immediately slams into this kind of fast, heavy riff, which is great. And there's one section in this song that it's kind of got a bit of a surf feel to it almost. So this one was interesting to me. I really liked it a lot. They're kind of changing it up all within this song several times. Kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. All right. That brings us to the... by the way, I just got some songs, and I'll share these in a little bit. I got some more choices for the 80s, and I'll share those after we're done talking about the record. The next one is Aryan Embarrassment, and this is the one that has Jello Biafra on it.
Yes.
And this one talks about going along with that Nazi thought, Nazi tactics, however you want to look at that. And this one is really clever with the lyrics, and it's we must confront our enemy, and then it goes back and forth, alt-right, alt-reich, and basically establishing that link. So I thought that was pretty clever. Sometimes I don't feel like Al's lyrics are super clever or poetic. They're very straightforward and in your face. This is one of those. I think he's pretty clever and tongue-in-cheek in the song.
Yeah.
Another great song.
And you have Jello, who adds a whole different dimension to the lyrics and all of that. So this, of course, is cool because Al and Jello together is always exciting. If anyone listening does not know about this band, they should check out a band called Lard, L-A-R-D, Lard, which essentially was Al and Jello back in the day doing some crazy industrial stuff, and including a cover of the show tune, I'm coming to take you away, ha, they're coming to take me away, ha, hee hee, ha, all that stuff. So, yeah, this one, it's great to, there's always room for Jello, so he's, you know, it's great to hear him on this song. And it's got an interesting intro, and it kind of just settles into this pocket where it's just kind of a head nodder, like nothing terribly exciting going on, but just a great groove to kind of nod your head to. Cool stuff.
Yep. The next song is a version of a song that appears on about every record. It's a TV song.
Yep.
And this is the 1/6 edition. At first, when I saw it, I'm like, what are they talking about? Then
yeah.
January 6th.
I was like, 1/6? What is that? And then I was like, okay.
This is our house. Our house is in shambles. Yeah. Democracy or autocracy? You know, like, oh, okay. Yeah, we're back again. another poignant song from Uncle Al, but another good song. I enjoyed it. musically, I started to kind of get into a groove. I needed to get out of that groove, and so hadn't happened yet, but it's good. I didn't love this one.
Yeah, this one, it picks up the pace a little bit, so that's a little different. I will say, like, the TV songs, like you said, like, starting, I think, on Psalm 69, there's been a TV song on almost every album, and they're usually not great. They're never my favorite thing. They're usually, it's just noisy and loud and just kind of blah. So this one actually was not bad for a TV song. Like, there's some cool music going on. It's not just noise. And, you know, the focus on this one was kind of cool. A lot of interesting soundbite samples and stuff. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Can't believe he went after that.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem on brand. The next song, New Religion. And this one's about big business putting the profits over our lives.
It's also about Fox News.
He most definitely staying on brand yet again.
Yeah.
I mean, this might be the most consistent record we've ever reviewed on the show. Yeah. And this one, again, another just standard, straightforward industrial. I was ready for the next song after this one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm nothing spectacular here. There's some good, solid wrist work on the rhythm guitar on this. There's some, you know, some good chugging going on and some speedy chugging going on. So other than that, you know, just kind of is.
Yeah. The next song, It's Not Pretty. This one is the one that brought me back in, because I kind of got in that groove and I was ready to get out of it a little bit. And this is the one that opens up with some acoustic, which is awesome on a record by Ministry, because you don't get that softer side a whole lot. And so now the brand is the same. I mean, we're still speaking about the end of times or bringing that about. So that stays pretty much the same. But there was nice acoustic opening, and then they come in and get harder as we go, which was nice. It was a cool buildup, and I like this one quite a bit. It's called It's Not Pretty. I don't think I said that at the beginning.
I really don't have anything to add. You pretty much covered everything I had to say. The acoustic guitar is a refreshing change of pace for Ministry. I was not expecting that, but it does kick in and get a little heavier as the song goes on. So, but yeah, pretty cool.
We always talk about that little number of songs in the middle-ish of the record where we get that lull, and this for me broke out of that, which was good. The next song is called Cult of Suffering.
Great title.
And it is a great one, and this one is about Putin and Russia, and I didn't realize this. I looked it up, but at their shows, they have something up on the curtain beforehand in support of Russia. In support of the Ukraine.
Yeah, I was going to say. Cool.
Yeah, my bad. But so this song goes right along with that, putting Putin in his place and singing in support of the Ukrainians.
This is a, fun song might be the wrong word, but the music is fun for me. It actually, the feel of this one is a little different from the other stuff on the album. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me more of a KMFDM song, to be honest, which I don't hate. And the vocals are very different. I don't know. Did you look up who it was? I did. I had to look it up. So
the vocals that were in Russian?
No, the whole song.
Oh, no, I didn't look it up, all the lyrics.
It is the singer of this song is, I'm going to butcher this last name probably. It's Eugene Hoots. H-U with the umlauts, T-Z, Eugene Hoots of Gogol Bordello. So, yeah, I knew I was listening to him. Like, I know that's not Al.
No, it's too soft.
Yeah, but well, it also really thick accent. Mm-hmm. So I had to look it up, and yeah, it's him. And it's cool. It's great. Works really well on this song. This is a great song.
I would imagine it's a Ukrainian. That would make total sense.
I don't know. I mean, Gogol Bordello, they've been around for a long time, so. I don't know. I think he might be German, but I'm not sure.
Somebody look it up. Tell us. All right. The final song, which was, it's an interesting album closer in that it's not their song. It's a remake of a song by Fad Gadget from 1980, I believe. And you can tell. And while he's put his little spin on, it definitely has that early 80s sort of punkish vibe to it, which I thought was really cool. And it really kind of put a stamp on the end of this record in a different way, which I thought was really neat. And the song's about the perils of drunk driving, which it's not quite on brand with the rest of it, but I think they've played this live before. So I think maybe he's had this, you know, on tap for a while, but a really cool remake of Ricky's Hand. Really like this
song. I have never heard the original song. I knew this had to be a cover though. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, it's way too different. But yeah, it's like, I mean, he brought in more of that old school sound. But also, like, the synths and the guitars playing together are awesome. Because you have that synth sound, but you have that real heavy distorted guitar playing the same thing with it. And it just sounds spectacular. Really, really cool. They play it a couple times. There's this hook they play with the synths that's really cool. Sounds really great. Very memorable, kind of an earworm. So kind of a cool way to end the album. I mean, it's not I don't know where else this would have fit in the album, so it's kind of just an add-on. Like the Cult of Suffering could easily have been the last track on this song, but this is kind of just tacked on the end, I think. But it's a fun way to go out, I think.
Thematically it didn't really fit.
Yes, I agree with that.
And lyrically, it was written differently than the rest of the songs.
Yeah,
I just liked it. I thought it was refreshing when I got to the end and heard this, and it was just totally different from what we had just heard. So I thought it was a cool. So I would say it was a good album closer.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what's your score? And will you listen again?
I would say probably 3.5. In the oeuvre of Ministry, I think this is a decent offering. You know, I don't know that it would be near the top of my list for them, but there's a lot of fun stuff to dive into and eat up here. So I had a good time with it. I will definitely be listening to it again. There's probably some songs I'll throw on some of my different playlists. So that last one, that cover, is definitely going on my covers list. So good time.
Good, good. I'm probably a 3 to 3.25. I would say, it is not one of my top Ministry records. It was good. It's solid. It does what it's supposed to do, but and you know, when you get his records nowadays, it's going to be extremely political across the board. And I don't have any problem with using your art to do that. It's just heavy when every song after song after song is a political statement.
Kind of hits you over the head.
It really does. It really does. And so, like, individually, when they were coming out, I was loving it. They were so fun, and he was calling these people out, and it was really good. I just think, for me, I enjoy lyrics that are maybe not as clear and direct, so that everybody can wrap it around their own life, and find out where they are, and kind of enjoy the song that way. But 3.325, and there are a couple of songs I will listen to again that I really enjoyed. I really liked that cover; that was really cool. And I didn't know Fad Gadget; he died in 2002, so he was not super old. He was only 40 some years old. So, that was Ministry, Hopium for the Masses.
So, before we close out on them, I wanted to mention Al's band that he has with him now that I think he's had for a little bit now. So John Bechdel, he's been around for a long time. Cesar Soto, I'm not familiar with who that is. His bass player, I didn't realize this actually, He's been with him since 2019, but his bass player is Paul D'Amore, who is the original bass player for Tool.
Wow.
He's on the Undertow album. So.
Oh, cool.
But he's been with Al for a few years now. On drums is Roy Mayorga, who you might be familiar with. No?
That name sounds really familiar.
Stone Sour.
Stone Sour. That's right.
And,
go ahead.
And he played with Hell Yeah. And on guitar, Monty Pittman. Monty Pittman is awesome. He is... a lot of people probably know him. He's been Madonna's guitar player for a long time, both in recording and live. And he was in Prong for a minute, which is how I first heard of him. And then he's got some really stellar solo stuff out there. But so it's no wonder like the music is as good as it is on this. He's got he always surrounds himself with quality musicians. So. But yeah, I just thought that was fun. The Paul D'Amore, and I thought that was interesting. And Monty Pittman, I love, so wanted to mention him too.
I had no idea about Undertow.
Yeah,
and we will be doing the next Tool record in 8 years because it's been five, I think, since it came the last one. So should be every 13, 14 years, we should get a new Tool record. So.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm just hoping in this interim that they're going to get Danny and play some Rush stuff. We'll see. Well, I can always dream. All right, real quick follow-up. We did have somebody come in after the fact with their 80s record. And, of course, his comment was much the same as ours. This is an impossible question to answer.
Yeah.
So he also had Public Enemy. Well, he's cheating. He's making genres. I like the way he thinks. So he's got Public Enemy, NWA, and Beastie Boys, heavy metal-ish. He's got Nine Inch Nails, Megadeth, Danzig, Black Flag, and Ministry. That he's got Violent Femmes, Living Color, Motley Crue, Bad Religion, Bad Brains, Skid Row, Scorpions. I think he missed the part where we said five.
Yeah.
His top three were Pretty Hate Machine, Straight Outta Compton, and Injustice for All.
Solid.
Great choices, but we didn't. You know, we do this show. We didn't pick 20 each.
Yeah, we could have, but we didn't.
Definitely could have. Oh, next week. The record is going to be, you want to tell them?
Judas Priest just dropped a record, and that's amazing. Did you see that they set a record? They are the only band to have done this. Did you see it?
Uh-uh.
So they are the only band to have released two albums of new material 50 years apart.
Oh, my.
Ooh, so from their first album to now, or 50 years.
Holy moly. And that's 14 songs. So they didn't hold back. They really went all in. So what year? Let me look back here. I've got this up. Let's see what the first record was. What year?
Well, it'd be 74.
Right? Yep. Yeah. Wow. That is impressive. I wonder how many original members are still there.
Well, I'm trying to think. I think there were two members in the first lineup of Judas Priest that are still involved with the band, because their singer, actually their original singer, was not Rob Halford. Mm. So, and other members, like they're famous for their twin guitar attack of KK Downing and Glenn Tipton, and Glenn Tipton was not an original member either. So
they have one guy in here who looks 80. I bet he's an original member. I don't know if you can see his see that guy on the corner there.
Yeah.
Where is that? Backwards. So it's that guy right there.
Yeah.
Looks like he's about 80. Yeah, we'll see. We're gonna handle that one next week. 14 songs. Come back, check out Judas Priest. And we're gonna do the challenge of five songs that happened within my lifetime. To change the way we listen to music, and that can mean anything, right? It just
something that just kind of blew your mind and changed the way you hear music, and you know, it could be anything. Turned you on to a new genre, totally disrupted a genre you love, anything like that.
Yeah. And this shouldn't be very hard for us because we went through quite a few musical changes, especially me with being born before you. But there were a lot of changes in the late 70s to 80s and then 80s going into 90s. So that should be really interesting to see what we come up with. Hopefully we can get JPP back on the show live, or maybe Mr. Kevin Rader Rodenball would like to join us again. That was fun.
Be awesome.
The rest of you who are listening, please tune in next week and bring your answers. Let's find out what songs you really loved that changed the way that you listen to music. And we'll check out Judas Priest. Mr. Mundy, if we're looking for you, where can we find you?
You just go to Instagram, put in that right there, that my little handle on the show, Metalhead Mundy. Check the spelling. Make sure you get it right. Otherwise, you're not going to find me.
All right.
And my cat.
And his cat. Yeah, loves that. And you can find me at Foggy's Pal on Twitter, Instagram. And you can find articles about music and comics and other things, pop culture, over at wanderingsandwoolgathering.com. If you are a movie fan, you should go over and check out. I did the sticky on it, so it's the first one that you will see. But one of our writers for the site, Ray, has done what he thinks will be the top 25 grossing movies of the year, all the way down from 25 to 1 with why he chose them. It is fantastic. I agree with most of what he has in there, but I'd be curious if you guys would agree with what he's chosen.
Number one was Madam Web.
I know, he missed so badly already. It is not, but it is. See, this is a conversation for another day as well. And I'll just tell you right now, he chose Deadpool and Wolverine. So
okay,
I think it's a good choice because everybody loves Deadpool, but it will be interesting to see if Marvel movies now can have the legs to do that. Can they have two or three huge weekends like they used to? And I think if there's a character that can do it right now, it's probably Deadpool.
Yeah.
So we shall see. But until next week, it'll be next Sunday at 7 o'clock for Five Songs and Judas Priest. We will see you next week. We are going to leave tonight with Juno 19. Enjoy. We'll see you next week.